welcome to the Daily Daily Caller Podcast. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. It's December 13th, 2018, and we have got a ton of ground to cover. I'm going to try and do a little slightly different kind of show. I still have a lot of audio to play, but I want to get to a bunch of stories. So I'm going to try to blow through it all quickly. Problem is, once you get over an hour of a show, it ends up becoming a larger file, and you got to lower the quality of the audio to upload it. It's just a bunch of technical crap you don't need to know. You can email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com, your compliments and complaints, and they've been rolling in. I appreciate that. I always like knowing that people are listening, and I'm not just talking to cats. And so thank you for that. And you can also enter to win the signed Brian Kilmeade books, which we are going to... You can enter up until Friday afternoon. Let's just draw that deadline there, and we'll give them away at some point next week. We'll announce who won sometime next week, because I'm scheduled to interview Brian Kilmeade in studio on Friday, so I'll have him draw, and that means it's unclear how many copies I'll have to give away. They're supposed to be mailing me some. I don't know how many, so however many we end up with in addition to the two already have, that's how many we'll give away, because it's getting close to Christmas. And if you want to give them as a gift or as a gift to yourself, I want to get that to you. So thank you for that. Remember to subscribe and rate and review on iTunes in particular. I know that everybody, other people use Google and all that, and please subscribe there as well. But iTunes is the big one that everybody pays attention to. That's why I mention it so much. So even if you don't like Apple, you can go to iTunes and you can rate and review the show. And subscribe, and then you don't ever have to listen to it. I'd appreciate it. Okay, like I said, I want to move quickly. So if you're listening at time and a half or double time speed, you might not want to do that today, unless you're doing it for time and you can listen very quickly. Like I feel like I'm talking like the Micro Machines guy already. Yesterday was a busy news day. There was a lot of stuff that went down. It was sort of the year-end crush in getting all the stories out there. We have Mika Brzezinski sticking her foot in her mouth, but people are focusing on that, which was stupid, and we'll play it. But the build-up to that point was just as stupid, and that it doesn't even involve Mika. I'll explain and play the audio and dissect it. Plus, a member of Congress just wishes he had totalitarian powers to regulate speech. He says that's no big deal. He admitted that he can't do it. But the impulse was there, which I find disturbing, because knowing the way the left is doing right now to speech, to free speech in the public square, that's not too long before they start trying to. Well, they already are trying to. Anyway, I'll explain all of that. Plus, Sesame Street gets a homeless Muppet. That's not really super newsy. I will explain that as well. But I want to start off really quickly with the Michael Cohen news and the scandal story that the media just keeps on building up. Michael Cohen was sentenced to 3 years in prison yesterday, 36 months for tax evasion, lying under oath, all the charges that don't really have anything to do with the president of the United States. And this is, of course, a big deal to the media. They think, well, now we've got to start impeachment proceedings. They desperately want to impeach this president. It's shocking how they always call it, it's a constitutional crisis, and they're wishing for it. If you got a hold of their Christmas list, it would be just maybe a nose job and a constitutional crisis, and that would be about it. Maybe a tummy tuck or a chin tuck. But on everybody's list would be a constitutional crisis so we can move to impeachment. They're trying to manufacture one. There really isn't one yet. I don't know what laws would have been violated. Nobody has explained it. And if Alan Dershowitz, who has been studying the law since the earth cooled and is liberal as the day is long, can't find a law that has been broken, I'm not sure what good anybody else's opinions are. That doesn't stop people from expressing them. Still, Cohen was convicted of tax evasion, of something to do with taxicab medallions, which, thanks to regulation and huge government and overpowering government in New York City, apparently they're worth their weight in gold. I don't understand it. They're trying to get rid of Uber. New York's just a regulatory hellhole. In addition to the Cohen news, because there really isn't all that much to... He's got a report to prison in the first week of March. And Lanny Davis, his attorney, who is Hillary Clinton's good friend, although you'd never know that if you read Lanny Davis's emails to Hillary Clinton. He goes at her like a beat puppy. They're really funny. I highly recommend. He kisses her butt, asking her for a basic favor that I think a real friend would do without hesitation. He goes at her like he was an abused puppy. Lanny Davis announced that his job in the next 3 months is to make sure that Cohen gets his story out there, which is essentially putting everybody in the media on notice that soon, likely after Christmas, after the new year, Michael Cohen will be available for interviews to fulfill your fever dreams. What makes this funny is he will be all, you'll think he was Michael Avenatti or something. You'd think Michael Cohen would have put on a Michael Avenatti suit. He'll be all over CNN and MSNBC so much you'd think he has his own show. But if you remember, not even, I was going to say a year ago, 6 months ago, all they did was talk about how Michael Cohen was a liar and he's a fraud and a joke and nobody should take him seriously. Now, suddenly, they will treat him as if he is a sage, a genius, a truth teller. Jim Carrey in the movie Liar Liar, who could do nothing but tell the truth despite his wishes. I never cared for Michael Cohen. I always thought he was kind of creepy. One of the things that I've sort of always rubbed me the wrong way about Donald Trump during his campaign wasn't anything that Donald Trump did. There were some things that Donald Trump did, but the one thing that sort of overrode everything else was that the people close to Donald Trump, and I would have thought, I don't know their relationship, but it was certainly portrayed that Michael Cohen and Donald Trump had worked together for a very long time and were friends as well as colleagues, as well as, you know, the lawyer-client relationship. But Cohen and many other people who work for Trump always called him Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump this, Mr. Trump that, when talking about him. As many times as they said his name, it was always Mr. Trump. Now, Cohen went way overboard and was slobbering. You could tell there was some hero worship going on there, and I don't care for hero worship. I don't like cult of personality crap, no matter who's doing it, whether it's on the left with Obama or on the right with certain people who have been elevated to hero status in the mainstream media as representatives of conservatives. I'm not going to name names. If you can't figure it out from that, you don't need to know anyway. But it drives me nuts. How about you judge people on their actions and not worship them? They are just people, after all. Cohen kind of struck me as, I don't know, just too much of a butt kisser or something, and Mr. Trump this and Mr. Trump that. And now Cohen says that he gave into the dark. He gave into the dark side. Suddenly it becomes a George Lucas movie. He said that I chose darkness over light, and that his blind loyalty caused him to do dirty deeds. No, Michael Cohen, your blind loyalty to Donald Trump had nothing to do with you not paying your taxes. Had nothing to do with you and whatever the taxicab medallion business was. That was all you. It had nothing to do with Donald Trump. But it always bothered me that he always called him Mr. Trump. I think, you know, maybe the first time, okay, just like a newspaper article, the first time they say something, they use the person's full name, but then you get the gist of it, of who they're talking about, if they use the last name or just the first name. That just always rubbed me the wrong way about Cohen. He seemed kind of too eager to please. I didn't really know what kind of law he practiced, and apparently he wasn't very good at practicing law. That's ultimately his downfall. But there is another story coming out of New York that I think is a bigger story than Cohen. Cohen's going away. Nobody's life except his family's is going to change. If you notice, though, nobody on the left is saying we're separating this family. How can we separate this father from his two children? He does have two children. And in the grand scheme of things, Michael Cohen, his crimes were essentially victimless crimes. Nobody was hurt. Nobody had their stuff stolen. He cheated at the game of business. but he didn't rip anybody off as far as I know. Yet he's going to prison for 3 years. And now these sweet, nourishing illegal aliens who want $50,000 a head to go away, which we'll get to in a minute, are portrayed as the best among us. And we couldn't possibly arrest them and hold. They have children. Therefore, they must be released into the United States. We can't separate families. Oh, by the way, Michael Cohen, make sure you hug your kids real good and tight tonight, because you're going to be torn away from them for 3 years, and liberals will celebrate that. It's just a bit of hypocrisy I wanted to note. And in the vein of hypocrisy, I want to point out something that is not going to get much media coverage. It wasn't even the focus of this NBC News story. NBC News has a headline out of New York involving the president. The headline is, "Incoming New York Attorney General plans wide-ranging investigations of Trump and family." The subheadline, "Just elected Letitia James, who takes office next month, tells NBC she will probe real estate deals, Trump Tower meeting emoluments, Trump Foundation, and more." Now, this story is not about how this incoming attorney general of the state of New York is vowing to literally go on a witch hunt of anybody named Trump and anybody associated with Trump. They don't. It's just sort of a wide-ranging story about her plans for office. This is an incredible abuse of power. And I can't believe that this isn't causing media outrage. Well, okay. I take that back. I can absolutely believe it. But it really lets you know who's a civil libertarian and who is just a liberal hack. Just a little bit from this story. Quote, "New York Attorney General-elect Letitia James says she plans to launch sweeping investigations into President Donald Trump, his family, and, quote, anyone, end quote, in his circle who may have violated the law once she settles into her job next month." Does that not sound like we're going to look into your life and find out whether or not you have committed any crimes? The way it works in this country is the exact opposite of this. There has to be some sort of crime alleged, and then there has to be some kind of evidence that a crime was committed. Then they launch an investigation to find out who did it. Not here. They're going to look into everybody. They're going to use taxpayer resources in the state of New York to simply look at anybody associated with the President of the United States to find out if they've broken any laws. This strikes me as a massive abuse of power. A little bit more from the article. Quote, this is Letitia James talking here in this quote. Quote, "We will use every area of the law to investigate President Trump and his business transactions and that of his family as well," James, a Democrat, told NBC News in her first extensive interview since she was elected last month. Isn't that lovely? They're going to use every area of law to investigate, not to find out if this happened or that happened. There's no allegations of wrongdoing. They're just going to crawl through the colon of the Trump Organization, the people who work there, anybody named Trump, and anybody who took their time walking past Trump Tower longer. They sort of lagged behind longer than this woman thinks was worthy. Going to look into everybody. Now, this, of course, somebody on Twitter, I forget who it was, tweeted this story with a picture of from Donald Trump's wedding to Melania Trump, of Donald Trump, Melania Trump, Bill Clinton, and Hillary Clinton. Anybody, you say, Attorney General James. No, of course they don't mean everybody. Donald Trump was a Democrat for most of his adult life, and the people he did business with in New York were likely all Democrats, I suspect, or largely Democrats. I suspect they'll be safe. But if there is a stray Republican in there, they better get their books in order, because here comes the state government with the power of the state and the bottomless purse of the state to make your life a living hell for existing wrong in their eyes. This is fascistic. And this should be a major story. This should be a shame. Frankly, this should cause Letitia James to resign her job before she even gets sworn in. if this is her attitude and this is her understanding of the law and how it is supposed to be implemented, she has no business being in a position of authority in a supermarket, let alone the Attorney General of any state. Yet this has kind of gone without notice, without exception, without outcry from the so-called civil libertarians. I bet you the ACLU won't say anything about this blatant abuse, threatened abuse of power. I do hope that the Attorney General and the Justice Department of the United States are paying attention, the acting Attorney General, because this is major abuse of power. We're going to go through your whole life and anybody associated with you, and we're going to find out if you did anything wrong. This is the stuff that really bad movies are made of, where a government official completely abuses their power. The villain in the movie does this sort of crap. And the hero fights it and eventually takes on City Hall and takes them down and exposes the corruption. There's no need to expose the corruption. The perpetrator, before they even took office, is telling the world about the corruption. This is what I'm going to do. I can't stand this SOB, and I'm going to go after him with everything we've got. Where is the outrage? Of course, you don't expect to hear this on MSNBC or CNN or ABC or CBS and all the broadcast networks, but it should be. Could you imagine if the Attorney General of Illinois back in 2008 or 2010, say they just, I don't know who it was or what party they were, say they elected a Republican. And the incoming Republican says, you know what we're going to do, and my main focus, I'm going to pro Barack Obama's community organizing affairs. I'm going to make sure that all the money is in order, any money that he touched, Michelle Obama too. And we're going to go through his records as a state legislator. By the way, there are a lot of rumors about him as a state legislator involving women. But nobody ever bothered to look into them because it doesn't matter. I don't think it matters, and it shouldn't matter. And they probably aren't true. Who knows? Everybody in politics get these rumors. But imagine if an attorney general came in and said, we're going to find it. We're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to find out if they moved a girlfriend to the Caribbean once people started catching wind of it and all of this stuff. Well, we're going to see if they've ever done anything wrong. We're going to make sure that every T is crossed and I is dotted in everything he's ever written. The outcry from the media, from the people silent now, would be deafening as their silence now. You would not have been able to step outside without plugging your ears from the primal screams from the left over that. But because this is Donald Trump, they don't care. The left automatically assumes that he's a criminal and that there is complete and total justification to investigate anything remotely related to him. So this goes unremarked on. And along those lines, I just found that interesting, but along those lines of just assuming that Donald Trump is a criminal, we'll get to the Mika thing now. Before Mika Brzezinski used the term butt boy, the homophobic slur butt boy on Morning Joe yesterday, right in the beginning of that segment, in the setup, it was a discussion about Jamal Khashoggi, which is, of course, the topic burning up everybody's lips who appears on Morning Joe. Not really too many people outside of that, but suddenly they care very deeply about the fate of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Or Khashoggi, or however they propose to announce it. They haven't said squat about the 18 journalists murdered in Mexico this year. Not a word. But Jamal Khashoggi, not an American citizen, killed not on American soil by people who are not Americans, is suddenly the most important. Well, it was just named Time's Person of the Year not that long ago, so obviously it's important. They have Time Magazine in the green room at MSNBC, which is That and dentist's office, where the only alternative is a 1973 edition of Highlights magazine, are the only choices for your reading pleasure while you wait to have your teeth drilled, and it's the only place that Time magazine is read anymore. Well, Mark Heilman, or is it John Heilman and Mark Halperin? They were the two who did Game Change, and they wrote all those books, and they were going to have another book on the 2016 election until Mark Halperin was exposed as a sexual assaulting pervert and forced to resign from Morning Joe. They all pled ignorance, including John Heilman, who was his writing partner for more than a decade. And he said, "I didn't know anything about this." By the way, if you mention that fact to John Heilman on Twitter, he immediately blocks you, as all good journalists do. Run and hide, run and hide. John Heilman knows why Donald Trump doesn't care about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. There's no evidence that Donald Trump doesn't care. It's just that as president of the United States, you cannot be an idiot on MSNBC spouting off. They basically act as though they want war with Saudi Arabia over the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. And quite honestly, Jamal Khashoggi isn't worth it. He's not worth it at all. They next want us to destroy our relationship with the next king of Saudi Arabia, which, again, Jamal Khashoggi isn't worth it. But John Heilman thinks he knows why Donald Trump doesn't care. This is wild speculation, just like the incoming attorney general of the state of New York, just going to sniff around to find out what crimes that may have been committed. John Heilman has convicted the president of not caring about Jamal Khashoggi's murder, not because of international relations or anything doing with that. It's because it's benefiting to him on a monetary level. You can't make this up. This is an award-winning journalist right here that you're about to hear wildly speculate and make stuff up on cable television. And I will tell you, nobody, not Joe, not Mika, not whoever else was on this panel, said boo about this or disagreed with this. I do love how it starts, though, because Heilman, Sieg Heilman, talks to Joe and he says, "I know you're right. I know you agree with me." He says something like, "You agree with me. That's how I know I'm right," which this is the echo chamber at work, and it's why Heilman can say the crap that he's about to spew without being challenged, without being asked to offer any proof of anything he claims. It's just accepted as dogma. Listen.
And look, Joe, you know, you and I have talked about this before. You and I have what I think is the right view about this, and it's a very harsh view, which is not that Donald Trump is ignoring the evidence, but that Donald Trump doesn't believe the evidence. Donald Trump just doesn't care. He has financial interests. He and his family have been tied up with MBS in Saudi Arabia for a long time. He wants to continue to be allied with MBS because he thinks there's a financial interest in doing so for after his presidency. And so he just does not care about the life of Jamal Khashoggi.
Sieg Heilman cares so much about the life of Jamal Khashoggi that he can't pronounce the man's name. But don't you love that? This is a quote unquote journalist essentially saying Donald Trump is making a ton of money with Mohammed bin Salman. He's going to stay tied up with that, so he doesn't care. he's just going to ignore the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Well, he has no proof for any of this. He can make money with him after his presidency. It's wild speculation. He is slandering. He is libeling the president of the United States. And nobody on the show goes, "Hey, you got any proof of these allegations there, Sieg Heilman? Should you maybe not be making these wild allegations like this?" But the old standards of there being standards no longer exist when it comes to journalism. It's just straight up, you can say whatever the hell you want about the president of the United States. And just assume the worst. You will be in a field of bobbleheads on the dashboard of a family truckster going down a dirt road because everybody in the media will be sitting there nodding right along with you. Like, "Yeah, oh yeah, Donald Trump is Hitler. He is absolutely the worst. He's a monster. And whatever you say goes." This is a supposed journalist. Now, he next turns his... I love how at the beginning he's like, we've talked about this, and we have the right opinion on this. Yeah. You agree with me, so I know you're smart. Do you ever find yourself in a situation, Sieg Heilman, where there is somebody who doesn't agree with you, and you do anything other than leave in disgust or shout them down? I doubt that. When you live in New York and you work for MSNBC, you are a double insulated bubble dweller. You are not going to find very many contrary opinions. So Sieg Heilman continues, and he has a question for Illinois Senator Dick Durbin based off of his wild lies. Listen.
But I do ask you, Senator Durbin, I can explain Donald Trump in those terms. They are crass and morally disgusting, but I can at least explain it, that he just does not care about the life of this journalist. I ask you, what possibly explains Mike Pompeo taking the position that he's taken? He's not going to make any money from MBS. He's got no financial connections to MBS that I know of. What could possibly explain his desire to look past the evidence that everyone who has seen it believes directly implicates MBS in this murder?
Now he drags in the Secretary of State. This is how this entire discussion started. Mike Pompeo was on Fox and Friends. And he basically said, we're not going to go to war. We don't know for sure what happened over there. We've got our intelligence assessments. We have a pretty good idea, but so on and so forth. It's the biggest non-story of the year, quite honestly, because who cares? And he asked Dick Durbin this. Well, why do you think? Because Mike Pompeo doesn't stand to make any money off of it that I know of. Well, why didn't you just make it up like you did about Trump? We've got trillions of dollars lined up after he leaves Secretary of State's office. Maybe, just maybe, there's a valid reason that you are unaware of, Sieg Heilman, or that you are aware of but not willing to accept because you're suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. Now, the answer that I'm going to play from Senator Durbin, and I have always referred to Dick Durbin as the most appropriately named member of the United States Senate. If you ever watch C-SPAN and you see a Dick Durbin speech, he's staring right at the camera the whole time. It's kind of creepy. But if you've ever been in the chamber of the United States Senate, it looks normal on TV, other than the creepiness of some guy making incessant eye contact with a camera. If you've ever been in the floor of the Senate or in the chamber of the Senate in the gallery, you know that the camera for C-SPAN is about 18 to 20 feet up in the air. It's not a direct line of sight. If you're on the floor of the Senate speaking at the podium, you have got your neck craned up to look up to the camera. He's playing to the camera. Dick Durbin is a master of playing to the cameras. And he's as partisan as it comes. He's, I believe, the minority whip in the United States Senate, which is to keep all the other liberal Democrats in line. You don't put a squish there, and you don't put somebody with a mild manner there. No matter how he comes across on TV, Dick Durbin is a hard ass. Oh, you take that quote out of context, and that could be a bumper sticker or an indictment. Or a hate crime. The answer from Dick Durbin is actually fairly accurate and should, in a just society, in an honest society with honest journalists, put Sieg Heilman on his heels. It should embarrass him. It should shame him. But it doesn't. They just kind of ignore it. Listen to what Dick Durbin says, and it actually, to his credit, makes sense.
Go back to that Fox interview. There was a reference made during the course of the interview by Secretary of State Pompeo to the line of succession in this monarchy in Saudi Arabia. I think that is at the heart of the position being taken by Secretary Pompeo. He is worrisome that if all trails lead to the crown prince, there could be a change of power in Arabia, and we're not certain which direction to be headed to. It is that uncertainty that probably leads him to this conclusion.
Notice how Dick Durbin is a partisan hack. I mentioned that. He doesn't ascribe this sort of motive of actual political sense to the president of the United States, just to Mike Pompeo. So he's letting stand Mark Heilman's ridiculous claims about the president, thinking he can make money off of the crown prince of Saudi Arabia in the future after he's left the presidency, and that's why he doesn't care about sweet, sweet, nourishing Jamal Khashoggi, who I would suspect Mark Heilman has never mentioned his name before he was murdered, if I had to guess. But Dick Durbin gives the right answer. He just won't allow that answer to apply to the president because he's a partisan hack that, hey, if Khashoggi is, if MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, is not the next king of Saudi Arabia, and Mohammed bin Salman is somebody we can work with, he is more on the moderate end of fanatical Islam that rules Saudi Arabia. He's allowing women to vote. He's allowing women to drive, for example. He's brought in some updates. He's brought them into the early 20th century. So, I mean, that's seems ridiculous to us, but it's a major leap forward for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And if he is outed as the successor, we don't know what we'll get, because the royal family in Saudi Arabia, there are, it seems, thousands, hundreds at least, members of the royal family who would love to be in a position to be the next king of Saudi Arabia. If there was a power vacuum there because the liberals in this country, in an attempt to embarrass Donald Trump, caused bin Salman to not become the next king, who knows what we'll get? We don't know who will end up in that position. And Saudi Arabia is a very important ally to the United States in the region. We have military bases in Saudi Arabia. If one of the more radical members of the royal family somehow managed to position themselves to be the next king, the whole region could go to hell. Israel and Saudi Arabia are not even talking about war right now. There's a thawing of relations between those two nations. It's not talked about a lot. It's not celebrated openly because everything over there is kind of tenuous. But it's a good thing. They are helping us in the fight against ISIS, for example. Should we throw all of that down the toilet because an opinion columnist whose work occasionally appeared in the Washington Post was murdered on foreign soil? None of it involving Americans. Should that be what we do? Dick Durbin laid out a perfectly reasonable explanation as to why that would be insane. Of course, nobody on the panel took it to apply to the president of the United States. They all just went with the Donald Trump. He stands to make a lot of money, wants to make a lot of money with this guy. So he's over there dancing on Khashoggi's grave, which I guess would be the sewer systems in Istanbul, Turkey. But it's insane. Dick Durbin accidentally stumbled onto the truth. And in international relations, sometimes you have to look the other way as people do some horrible, horrible things. We're not dealing with the UK. We're dealing with Saudi Arabia. This is not surprising. The entire region is kind of a cesspool for corruption. All you can hope for is that you get somebody who can be more honest with you. And what they do to other people, you can't dictate because the alternatives are much, much, much worse. But that's not good enough out there for the likes of the Prozac or whatever, Mika Brzezinski. This is where she got herself, well, she didn't get herself into trouble, really, because she's not at risk of losing her job or even being suspended. But this is where she opened herself up to criticism.
I understand that Donald Trump doesn't care. Heilman makes a good point. He doesn't care. But why doesn't Mike Pompeo care right now? Are the pathetic deflections that we just heard when he appeared on Fox and Friends, is that a patriot speaking? Or a wannabe dictator's butt boy? I'm dead serious. I'm asking, are these the words of a patriot?
Now, this airhead wants to challenge the patriotism of Mike Pompeo because he does not take her advice on international relations. Yeah, it is the height of arrogance over there on MSNBC, and it's absurd. But she, the thing that everybody is sticking on is the butt boy comment. Do you want to be tyrant's butt boy? I love how, first of all, Donald Trump is a wannabe tyrant. He's a tyrant. He's a monster. None of these people who have called Donald Trump worse things than any Republican has ever called Barack Obama. Any Republican of note. You can find some random dude on Twitter who said horrible things about everybody. But I'm talking about anybody of note said about Barack Obama. And there's no outcry. There's no, hey, what are you going to do? It's just accepted. Just challenging his patriotism, and he's a wannabe tyrant. He's calling him a traitor, essentially, selling out this country so that he can profit off of it. But he's a wannabe tyrant. None of these critics, none of these people saying all these horrible things, Trump is Hitler, have been arrested, have faced any consequences whatsoever. Hell, most of them have gotten promotions and raises. So if Donald Trump is a tyrant, he's horrible at it. He's just awful at it. Just like if Donald Trump is an anti-Semite and a racist, he really sucks at those things. He's really, it would be a great world if all the racists and anti-Semites were as bad at being racist and anti-Semites as Donald Trump is at being those things. But this is absurd. So she does the butt boy thing. Butt boy is, of course, par for the course for the Democratic left. They constantly love to make homophobic slurs and cracks about conservatives. This is who they are, from Stephen Colbert saying that Donald Trump's mouth is only good for one thing, and that's being Vladimir Putin's C holster. And the crowd laughed, and oh, and he had eventually to apologize because the gay community said, wait a second, what the hell are you making? So being gay is now a weapon to be used against people. Well, it is when you're a leftist and you get away with it. Mika did eventually sort of apologize on Twitter, not really, because being a liberal means never having to say you're sorry. But she did the sort of, I should have used better words. Yeah, you should have used better words. The Washington Post wrote up, Mika Brzezinski described Mike Pompeo with a homophobic phrase. Her non-apology didn't help. This will likely be the last story written in the Washington Post about this. They quote Richard Grenell, Rick Grenell, who is the U.S. ambassador to Germany. He's also happens to be gay. And they quote one of his tweets, and they say, this is how it sets up. The tweet was attacked from multiple angles. Quote, accepting apologies is important. We all fail. But I don't see that you've actually apologized to gays, said one. And it's Rick Grenell, U.S. ambassador to Germany. They actually embed the tweet in the piece. Theoretically, the author of this piece could have pointed out, hey, you know what, a high-ranking official in the Trump administration who is gay even complained about Mika and was fairly magnanimous about it. They quote everybody else they cite, they put a name to it. But for Rick Grenell, Republican conservative, it's just said one. You gotta love it. To be a Democrat. By the way, Mika did apologize to Senator Dick Durbin. This is what her tweet said after somebody had criticized her. She said, quote, totally agree with you. Super bad choice of words. I should have said water boy, like for football teams or something like that. Apologize to Dick Durbin, too. So sorry. So sorry. Now, do you hear an apology in there? Do you see an apology anywhere in there? Of course not. Now, what you're missing is the next step in the outrage machine that rules the left. If Sean Hannity had said this, they would have already had firehannity.com up and running. The hashtag would have been trending, not because of the number of tweets, but because the people at Twitter would have been on board with it. They would have fired up all the Twitter bots to be tweeting at every sponsor who runs an ad on Sean Hannity's TV and radio show. And by the end of the day, they would be happily recounting the number of sponsors that they got to drop Hannity over this awful, horrible, homophobic slur. Mika calls Mike Pompeo Donald Trump's butt boy. There was no organized attempt at a boycott. There was no outcry. There was criticism. But everybody quickly moved on. certainly the mainstream media moved on. This story in the Washington Post with that headline, the apology didn't help, is about as harsh as the critics got from the left and from the mainstream media. I suspect tomorrow or today on the program, she will apologize at some point in some way along the lines of what she said. And it'll be one of those, I'm sorry if I offended anybody, I shouldn't have said it apologies, which is a non-apology. And that'll likely be the end of it. You won't hear it again. There is not a mobilized operation on the right to get people fired. That, theoretically, is a good thing. That is how the world should work, but it is not how the world works. And it bothers me to see, you know, I've always been a proponent of free speech. I want liberals to speak more because the more they say and the more that people hear what they say, the less interested the average American becomes in their insanity. But I'm sick of being held to different standards. I'm sick of allowing the hypocrisy to continue. Maybe we do need to claim a scalp. Maybe not Mika's, but somebody's scalp somewhere has to be gotten by the conservatives for the garbage, the absolute hate, vitriol, racism, sexism, and lies spewed at conservatives on a hourly basis on cable news. We shall see if that ever comes to pass. Conservatives are really awful at partaking in boycotts and things like that because they mistakenly think we live under the old rules where I leave you alone, you leave me alone, we just agree to disagree. That is not the world anymore, sadly. And I think it's going to take several scalps actually claimed by the right of the left for it to actually sink in on somebody. I'm not talking about getting a contributor fired. I'm talking about hitting them where it hurts with a boycott of advertisers. MSNBC and NBC News, according to the Washington Post, had no comment about Mika's homophobic slur. They are, of course, the network of Joy Reid, whose old blogs and tweets were filled with homophobia, racism, and she claimed that those it was just hacked. She didn't know. How was this hacked? And then it turned out that they weren't hacked, that those were her actual words. So don't expect MSNBC to do much of anything. Maybe they'll give her the weekend off. They'll give her a long weekend. But in the grand scheme of things, who the hell wouldn't want a long weekend when you're making $2 or $4 million a year, whatever the hell she's being paid? So it'll be of no consequence whatsoever. It's good to be a liberal. Well, I just looked at the time and we're really burning through it. There's so much to get to. I'm going to have to be less verbose. I want to talk next about Congressman Ted Lieu out of California, not a particularly bright man. An angry man, a liberal man, and he actually happens to be Kurt Schlichter's member of Congress out there. My buddy Kurt lives in his district, poor bastard. But that's what happens out in California. He was on CNN and talking about the Google hearings. I was going to play more of the audio for the setup, but I'm going to skip it for the interest of time and just summarize it. The host, Brianna Keeler, I believe, was asking about the Google hearing yesterday and whether or not she was very concerned that Democrats might have missed an opportunity to talk about the foreign interference in the election and the spread of misinformation by Russia, essentially. And Ted was very concerned about that as well. And he complained that, well, you know, I wish I had more than 5 minutes to ask my questions, but what are you going to do? Well, if you have 5 minutes and you waste it on partisan crap, maybe that's on you, Ted, which is what Ted did. But it was kind of funny because we found out yesterday that on Google, which controls an inordinate share, at least a third of all online advertising, that the Russians spent a good $4,300 or something like that on advertisement during the 2016 election. So you add that to the 10 grand they spent on Facebook ads, and you're fast approaching $15,000. And if you can sway an election for $15,000, a nationwide election for $15,000, we've got bigger problems in this country. Of course, it's absurd. It had absolutely nothing to do with it, but Democrats will never accept the fact that Hillary Clinton was a horrible candidate and the American people had had enough of her. You can just look at their little stadium tour, her and Bill's stadium tour, and the lack of sales and the cancellation of dates to discover the truth about what the American people think of the Clintons. And even the Democrats aren't willing to show up and listen to these two talk anymore. But that's a bridge too far for them to realize. And it's kind of sad and pathetic, but not surprising. Anyway, after that little bit of a discussion, Ted Lieu gets into what he thinks he's defending free speech here, I believe. But it's a dangerous impulse. Now, as you listen to this quote, keep in mind all the people, all the journalists on all the networks and all the newspapers and all the members of Congress and all the Democrats across the country who every time Donald Trump says fake news is the enemy of the people. And he always says fake news, not news. Fake news is the enemy of the people. And his criticism of journalism, they all clutch their pearls collectively and say that Donald Trump is a threat to the First Amendment. He's threatening journalists. He's actually a danger to the Constitution. And again, we go back to the, he's a wannabe tyrant. Now, Donald Trump has done absolutely nothing on this front. Nada. Zip. Zero. Taken no action, proposed no legislation, signed no executive order, implemented no new regulations, instructed the Justice Department to take action against no human being for the things that they have reported. He has just criticized the way they have reported. And he is called Hitler Jr. for that. What you're about to hear is a member of Congress, a prominent member of Congress, lament the fact that the First Amendment exists because he would love to be able to regulate speech. Little side note, liberals are regulating speech and silencing critics from sea to shining sea with their angry mob on college campuses and newspapers and anybody who dare in the entertainment field speaks up and uses words 10 years ago or in the sports world with the Heisman Trophy winner over the weekend when they were 14 years old. They'll destroy those people. They'll attack those people. They'll cost those people money. How many millions of dollars is that USA Today story against the Heisman Trophy winner going to cost him in endorsements? We can only guess. But they protect their own. This is a member of Congress, a Democrat in good standing, complaining essentially that he just can't fulfill his dream of regulating speech he doesn't like.
However, I would love to be able to regulate the content of speech. The First Amendment prevents me from doing so.
Oh, God, I would love to be able to shut people up and throw my enemies into prison or re-education camps. But that damn First Amendment, I would have gotten away with it, too, if it hadn't been for you meddling First Amendment champions. Can you imagine? I would love to. Oh, God, I would love to. I would love to murder my next door neighbor, but you know what? I don't want to go to prison. So that there's something inherent. He's essentially admitting, I want power. I want to silence my critics, but that stupid First Amendment just won't allow it to happen. Damn it. That means his instincts are totalitarian. Was Ted Lieu roundly condemned by the media? No, Breanna Keeler said after he was done talking, yeah, you know what, thanks for coming on, Governor. Oh, I mean, Congressman, I accidentally called you Governor. That literally was what she said. That was the extent of it. Breanna Keeler makes her living under the protection of the First Amendment. And a member of Congress said, I wish I could go and urinate on the Bill of Rights in the National Archives and just wipe the First Amendment and the Second, and the Fourth and Fifth. Let's just get rid of it. We'll just keep the, you can't quarter soldiers in somebody's house without their permission. And then he'll be happy. He just basically called for the thing that protects her job's existence for being white. I wish I could get rid of it. And she doesn't say, wait a second, what do you mean you wish you could, but that damn First Amendment is preventing you? Nope, no questions about that. Just wrapped it up. She could have asked a follow-up. She could have easily asked a follow-up. It didn't occur to her because she knew that who Ted Lieu was talking about regulating, who Ted Lieu and the Democratic Party wishes they could shut up, they aren't CNN. They aren't Breanna Keeler. She's on the team. She would probably be appointed to the selection committee for who has to shut the hell up if Democrats got their way. So what does she care? She should care, but liberals don't really care. They exempt themselves from the rules, and they want to hold everybody else to the rules down the line without exception. While Ted Lieu was dumb enough to articulate his totalitarian wishes, the rest of the Democrats in the media and in Congress, they tend to keep them to themselves and just move right along until they get a chance to legislate them. And God help us if they ever get a chance to legislate them. Can you imagine? Ted Lieu essentially said, I would vote to, if we had an amendment to repeal the First Amendment, I'd vote for it. Because then the world would be a better place. What kind of, this is the mentality. If we could just shut up our critics, if we could silence our critics, punish them, imprison them, we would achieve utopia. It worked with Stalin. The Soviet Union was very peaceful, aside from, you know, the gulags and the death. And worked in Nazi Germany. There wasn't a whole lot of internal strife in Nazi Germany. There's not a lot of dissent in Cuba. There are people fleeing Cuba, floating on doors 90 miles to get to Florida to escape it. But, you know, you can't make utopia without breaking a few eggs. The totalitarian instincts of the political left on full display and unremarked upon by the journalists who heard them. In migrant news, there is migrant news. The caravan is still stalled in Tijuana, Mexico, and good. The Democrats are still refusing to pay $5 billion, or less than half of one day's government spending, to build any part of a wall. It's still immoral, according to Nancy Pelosi. And I love it how they say, it won't work. It won't work. Yeah, just because it's worked everywhere else it's been done doesn't mean it'll work here. They're displaying the attitude that made this country great. It won't work. We shouldn't try. Isn't that what our country was founded on? It won't work. It won't. We're spending tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars a year on illegal alien social services, education, health care, everything you can possibly imagine. More than 60% of immigrants in this country are on some form of welfare when it's supposed to be illegal for them to do it. But we couldn't possibly spare $5 or $5 billion to build a fortified wall along the southern border, any part of it. Well, now those future aspiring illegal aliens have come up with a plan to end the stalemate. They're willing to go home if we, the United States, give them $50,000 per person. Isn't that lovely? $50,000 per person. Now, we've been told by the media that these people were afraid for their lives, fled their countries to come to the United States for a better life. All they want is a shot at a better life. They're scared to death of all the violence, and their lives are in danger in their country. And now for 50 grand, they're going to go, you know what, screw it. We'll go home. 50 grand, I'll go home. I'll risk death for $50,000? I don't really think so. I think we might have been sold a bill of goods. The Daily Caller has this story because the leader of this group is an accused terrorist. Isn't that lovely? You won't hear this anyplace else. A suspect in a 1987 bombing that wounded six American soldiers in Honduras is leading a group of migrants demanding entry into the United States. Alfonso Guerrero Ula organized a march of approximately 100 migrants to the U.S. consulate in Tijuana, Mexico, on Tuesday, the San Diego Union Tribune reported. Ula delivered a letter to the consulate on behalf of the migrants asking for either entry into the U.S. or a payment of $50,000 per person. Isn't that, quote, according to what he told the paper, quote, it may seem like a lot of money to you, but it's a small sum compared to everything the United States has stolen from Honduras. Yes, Honduras, we're the problem with Honduras. That's it. Sweet, nourishing Honduras was nothing but riches and tea-sipping and utopia before the United States got involved down there. Of course, that's garbage. Honduras is the problem with Honduras, the corruption down there. And if this guy hates this country so much, why the hell does he want to come here? And why in the hell would we ever let him in here? Of course, we shouldn't. But don't you love the attitude, this sense of entitlement? Give me something and I'll stop breaking your laws. Of course, he's full of it. He's lying. There's nothing going to stop him or his band of goons from coming into the United States. They might just go to a different port of entry or cross the border illegally where there is no barrier, the way Democrats like it. He'll turn himself in to either the first Border Patrol agent or Democratic Party activist with a voter registration form and then disappear into a sanctuary city near you. Juxtapose this, compare this with all the media stories you have heard about these sweet, sweet, nourishing immigrants down there. They're nothing but the best. They just want to come here and work. Well, here's a guy who hates the United States, blames the United States for all the problems in his hellhole country. And why does he want to come here? Well, he'll go back to his hellhole country for 50 grand. There is no law they won't break, and there is no law them breaking that will make the left stop championing them over American citizens. None whatsoever. I just thought you'd like to know the quality of the sweet, sweet, nourishing immigrants who are waiting patiently down in Tijuana because we won't let them into this country. They, according to our Democratic friends, make our economy work. Yeah, I'm sure they do. I'm sure this guy would be a super productive member of society. Is there an extra income tax on terrorist bomb makers? Do we put a levy or an excise tax on terrorist bomb makers? I can't believe there's a bomb maker down there. I mean, we've been told nothing but the salt of the earth down there. Shocking revelation that won't get reported anywhere in the mainstream media because they're corrupt and awful, awful people. Last two stories really quickly in the time we have left. Nancy Pelosi has struck a deal that will keep the empire out of here for... Oh, wait, no, that's Empire Strikes Back. That will keep her in the speakership, supposedly, probably, likely. She has agreed to term limits in the future for all Democrats, because the old Democrats, the older Democrats age-wise, are in all the positions of power. And the younger Democrats are going, we're never, ever, these people live forever. We're never going to get into committee chairmanship or any sort of leadership. So if they withheld their support for Pelosi and embarrassed her, that could cause her some problems and embarrassment. Not that it would ever show on her face. I loved her in The Dark Knight. I thought she was wonderful as the Joker, and that Oscar was fully deserved. So they've agreed to term limits. Three terms going forward. Of course, it's not retroactive. Three terms in leadership, and then you've got to give up your position in the Democratic caucus. As of now, they could always change this in the future. And there's an option for a fourth term if you get support of two-thirds of the Democratic caucus. So Nancy Pelosi had to agree to term limit herself in order to secure her speakership. Of course, right now under this deal, she could serve as speaker until 2022. God help us if she keeps that position or Democrats keep the House that long. But that would put her at the ripe old age of 82. So, yeah, I think it would probably be past her time to retire then. But this is how power works in Washington, D.C. It's the I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. It's kind of like how they deal with the coming crush of entitlement spending. We'll deal with that later. They come up with a solution to a current problem for themselves that won't really ever impact them. Everybody in Democratic leadership is in their late 70s. By the time this actually comes to the point where they would lose their positions because of this, they will either be dead or retired. But they get power now. That's how Washington works. And everybody will go away saying, we get victory. Not really. Okay, finally, today. This story is kind of ridiculous because I am in the middle of watching more Sesame Street than anybody should, because I have an almost 2-year-old, an 18-month-old running around, and you put on anything that involves Elmo, and holy cow, she just goes crazy for it. Well, there's a new resident on Sesame Street to play with Elmo and bring down everybody and make everybody horribly depressed. The new Muppet is named Lily, and Lily is a homeless Muppet. Here's how the Washington Post describes it. In one of the latest Sesame Street videos online, a Muppet named Lily is cheerfully painting a rainbow mural with Elmo when she suddenly looks downcast, which means that the puppeteer pointed her head downward. Quote, "I'm not sure I want to paint anymore," Lily says, dejected. "Doesn't feel like a rainbow kind of day." After some coaxing, Lily explains that they had gotten to the purple part of the rainbow, and purple is her favorite color. Her old bedroom was purple, but she and her family had to leave that bedroom behind. Quote, "We don't have our own apartment anymore, and we've been staying in all different kinds of places." Yes, yes, yes. The first homeless Muppet has hit Sesame Street. I think they had a Muppet with AIDS. I think they had a Muppet with autism. They have all different kinds of Muppets. Can't just leave kids alone. But I will take issue with the idea of Lily being the first homeless Muppet, one of the original Muppets. Debuted, first appearance, November 10th, 1969, 49 years ago. Almost, well, 49 years and 1 month ago, almost. Oscar the Grouch. He's been living in a garbage can for 49 years. How can the media just ignore the existence of the original, the OG, homeless Muppet, Oscar the Grouch? No respect whatsoever. So when you hear the talk about Lily, know that it's been done, and it's been done really well, and it's been done for 49 years, and you may have had a stuffed Oscar the Grouch growing up. So Oscar, we didn't forget you, buddy. Everybody else did, but we here, we got your back. But you can't crash on our couch because you stink. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Please tell a friend. Spread the word. Get everybody you can listening to the show. That's how we grow. You can enter to win the signed Brian Kilmeade books by emailing derek@dailycaller.com, sending compliments, complaints, and whatever else you got to say to that email address as well. And we'll see you again tomorrow for another exciting episode. Have a great one.
Is that a patriot speaking or a wannabe dictator's butt boy?